This is Arnold T. Blumberg, and you're listening to the Handsome Timmy D. Express.
Well, hello, dear reader, and hello, dear listener, and welcome to episode 14 of the Handsome Timmy D. Express, which is a proud part of the Dan and Travis Show, an awesome podcast that you could find on iTunes. Just look for Dan and Travis. We're also a proud part of the Chronic Rift, a network of podcasts that is looking for the culture in pop culture. Head on over and check out some of those great shows at chronicrift.com. I also want to thank everybody for downloading, listening. Traffic has just been terrific the past few weeks, so thanks everybody who's downloading, listening, retweeting, Pinteresting, Snapchatting, whatever it is you kids are doing. It's really working out great. Thanks for listening to the and spreading the word about this fantastic interview with South African acting sensation Rizelle Janook. And I've got another sensation this week. Really, really excited to talk to a fellow writer. He's a screenwriter, he is an author, and if that's not cool enough for you, he is the digital assets administrator for a little animation company based out of the Bay Area called Pixar. You may be familiar with some of their movies. You can find them on Netflix or just give them a Google. I am proud to be joined today by Mike Sunday. Mike, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having me on, Timmy.
I'm thrilled to have you on. One of the reasons why I asked Mike to be on this particular time, dear listener, is because in a few weeks' time, Mike and I are going to be throwing back a couple of cold refreshment with many fellow writers, filmmakers, and producers at what is one of the, if not the best film festival in the country, the Austin Film Festival, especially for screenwriters. And what's funny is that's where Mike and I met last year, but you actually met mutual friends of mine the year before who told me you guys have to meet each other. Tell us all about that.
Yeah, so this is going to be my fifth year at the Austin Film Festival, and last year is when I met you. The year before that is when I met our mutual friends, Steve and Simone. That was kind of I guess my philosophy on the Austin Film Festival changed. So the first couple years I went there, I was, just eager to soak in knowledge and, learn from these different panels and things like that. And then later it became more about like, well, why don't I start trying to talk to managers and agents? And that was not as fun because it was that, just that kind of business drive instead of just soaking it all in. So, the year I met Steve and Simone was much more the year of just trying to relax and kind of let things happen. And, go some person you don't know asks you to go to dinner, go with them. Somebody asks you to go check out a band in Austin, head out with them. You never know who you're going to meet or who they're going to introduce you to. So that's kind of how that happened. There was a very serendipitous meeting there.
It's networking heaven in many ways.
And totally.
As scared and awkward as you might feel, everyone else is feeling just as scared and awkward, which is, it's almost like, strangely, like it almost felt like the first day of school, except now we like knew stuff.
You're right. Yes.
So we weren't like, so just, I have no idea what's happening in the world.
Yeah. And I feel it definitely the first couple of years was like that. And now it feels like summer camp and like coming back and seeing all your old friends. And it's just a great time. Yeah.
Yeah, I was so glad Steve and Simone, who hopefully will be on the Handsome Timmy D Express soon, actually.
I would hope so.
Yeah, Steve Skaya has got a writing resume as tall as both of us. And I think he actually just sold two things this week, the jerk.
Awesome.
No, he's been on Jericho. He's been on Warehouse 13, just a Human Target, ton of fun shows. And his wife, Simone, is an actress. She was in Stargate. She was just in Neighbors. Wait, I'm getting it wrong. Life Partners.
Yes.
Life Partners are fantastic. I might have to edit that part. No, she was in Life Partners, a fantastic indie that's getting a ton of buzz and heat and stuff. So super talented and super nice people. I mean, and Steve's this guy, which is, he's a networking 101 guy because he like tweeted me like 2 weeks before a thing and he sent me your address. He's like, you got to meet Mike Sunday. He's the man. He was like, you got to meet Tim Davis. He's the man. You guys are going to get along great.
Right, and he was totally right. It was great to hang out with you last year and get to know you and Megan.
Yeah, that's right, who is twice second rounder this year, so that's why we're going.
Awesome.
I got two scripts in the second round. This is also, too, I want to establish, you were a finalist, so.
I was, but that was a couple of years ago.
Big tip of the hat to you. What was interesting was I didn't understand what a second rounder was. So Megan calls me. I was at work, and she says, "Well, you got one of your scripts got into the second round." And I was like, "Oh, second round? That sounds lame. I'm not going." And then they called me.
Top 10%.
Yeah, they called me and said, "No, you're in the top 10%. We just don't like the word quarterfinalist," or whatever the reason was.
Right.
And then I got home, and there was another letter saying another script got in the second round. I was like, "Okay, we're going." And
awesome.
Then this year has been a lot more about networking and stuff like that for me. And then Megan entered, and she got two in the second round. And this is turning into our
festival.
That
is great. And, you know, honestly, so I usually place in the second round. One year I got finalist. Last year I got nothing. So, but I still went and had a great time, you know. I think if I could talk about this for a little bit.
Please.
You enter all these writing contests, and some of them you're going to place in, and some of them you're not in. I've had the exact same script without changing a single word 1 year, not even make the second round, the next year be like a semi-finalist. So, you know, it's so much of it is the luck of those first couple readers and whether they like it and whether they pass it along. So I try not to, I used to get really down if I didn't make it into certain contests. And actually, just as a way of managing my confidence, I have greatly reduce the number of contests I enter. I only enter like 3 or 4 now. I used to enter like 10.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of, I've always felt contests are a good measure of that you're progressing as a writer. They're good signposts along the way to say, okay, you know, I'm a second rounder now. That's great. All right, how do I go further than that now? So what I did 1 year at Austin was, you know, they have the second rounder happy hour. I'm sure you went to that last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you also meet, like, anybody who's a second rounder and above. So
yeah.
I sought out some of the finalists, and I became friends with them, and I said, hey, let's trade scripts, because I really want to know what is separating the second rounders from the finalists.
Sure.
Let me, you know, analyze this. And I got some scripts, and there was a clear difference. And the main thing is that it was a completely smooth and effortless read. It's kind of hard to put into words, but basically there's no fat on it at all. Like, that's what I realized between, you know, my second rounder script and, you know, and I was able to take some of those lessons and apply it to my second rounder script and turn it into a finalist script. It took a few drafts after that, but it was really about kind of being ruthless on cutting down action, cutting down dialogue, just cutting it to the kind of core of the story. And make it feel like a smooth ride.
I absolutely love that you said that, because that also shows a certain, I don't know if the right word is humility or just a certain amount of perspective, because I think that deep down every screenwriter wants to present their script to the world and have the world say, oh my God, this is brilliant. You have to yes. come and be. We all want that, but the world is not waiting to do that, as we all learned the hard way. And to respond the way you did by saying, wait a second, what the hell is going wrong? You know, it's almost like, to use a football analogy, it's like you're the quarterback watching Tom Brady going, why can't I play like him?
Right.
So watch, study, analyze, yeah. Do your best. And that's a fantastic piece of advice, Mike.
Thanks. Yeah, and I feel a lot of that, you know, humility comes from working at Pixar and mm-hmm. seeing that process from the inside, which from the outside it looks like we produce number one films every single time.
Yeah, you just
They're
put pieces
perfect
together
out of
yeah.
the gate. Yeah. And that is so not true. Like, each film takes us about 4 or 5 years. We make the movie about 8 or 9 times internally, just in storyboard form.
Right.
And those versions are terrible, like especially the first few. They're just awful. But one of the cool things about working there is anyone in the studio can give notes. So, you know, I'm an IT guy. I can go to a screening, watch a early version of a film, and I email the producer directly. I say, hey, I didn't like this part. I got lost here. This was confusing. What happened to this character that you kind of dropped them? And they will take those notes and make the film better every single time. So just seeing that, like these, you know, Academy Award winning writers and directors, they have to put their stuff up in front of everybody. You see how raw and bad it is in the early versions. You know, there's usually a great idea there, but the execution of it is not good. And just to see the way they just keep focusing on, hey, let's get the bad version out there, and then let's just refine it and refine it until we figure it out.
And it's so funny. I'm like, I have this weird sort of aversion to that process because I hate the phrase writing is rewriting.
Yeah.
Because I I'm going to say something kind of schizophrenic here in the sense of like,
sure.
Like, it's okay to write crap, but at the same time, you should always be trying to write the best stuff you possibly can.
Oh, yeah.
And just not get depressed if that turns out to be crap that you could rework. As long as you're writing it down, that's right. The most important step.
That's true. And speaking to that point, I find if I'm in a good mood when I'm writing and I feel like it's really flowing, or if I'm in a horrible mood and it's really tough to eke out like a couple pages, it's a real grind. When I go back and look at those in the future, I cannot tell which pages I wrote and felt great about and which ones I just kind of ground through. So I don't know. I feel a lot of it's just about getting words on the page.
Well, that's the thing. You can't, people who, oh gosh, I don't want to sound mean here, but yeah, you exactly right. You cannot, the process starts with getting it written down on the page and understanding and knowing what is working, what is not. And there's, it's funny because you talk about this really open process that Pixar has, but there's also a kind of a ruthlessness to that. Of like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, listen, I tell people when I ask people to do reads, tell me if this sucks. If it's, you know what I mean? Like, right. I need to know where it falls apart. I need to know what section. A friend of mine just read a script of mine, and he gave me two notes that nobody else had given. And I don't know if they're the right notes, but they're certainly interesting in that I didn't notice it. Nobody else did. And it's giving me a lot to think about with those two scenes as far as what to rewrite.
Sure, and sometimes it might be you don't take that exact note, but it gets you started on like, this kind of touches on another problem I have in another part of the script, and then it starts percolating and you figure out something big you can change that solves a bunch of problems at once.
I know, and that's a great one in the sense like, you know, somebody gives you a note on page 18 and is like, page 18 just doesn't work. I don't like this page. And you read it, and you read it, and you read it, and you're like, damn, there's really nothing wrong with page 18. But if you reread pages 1 through 17, there may be a setup.
Yep.
And it's not the punchline. It's the setup to the punchline that needs to change.
Totally. Yeah, that happens a lot. And kind of speaking to your point of being ruthless, so we have a writer's group at Pixar, too. Mm-hmm. And there are about 5 to 7 of us who meet every Thursday night. And we are ruthless in our feedback. It's, there's the normal kind of way you give feedback, which is the compliment sandwich, mm-hmm. which is compliment up front, criticism in the middle, and then end with compliment, right? And it's to make it easier to go down.
Oh,
we
don't
do any of that. We just go right to the meat. Oof. And it's it's basically like, all right, here are all the things you need to fix. And it could be a little rough because you're like, well, was it any good at all? Did you like anything? But that's kind of understood. We've all grown as writers together and like kind of sharpened each other.
Hmm.
And I've been really proud of our little group out of like, they're really basically 5 core members. And like all of us have placed fairly highly in different contests. And I feel that speaks to that, just having a group who's helping each other and constantly giving you outside perspective on your own work.
Yeah, the pushing and challenging. I mean, we're trying to achieve greatness here. And I don't mean to sound grand about it.
No,
but we want to tell great stories that people are going to laugh at, cry at, laugh with, I guess I should say. You know, like I just recently watched, I know it wasn't a Pixar movie, but the Lego movie.
Oh, that was a great movie.
I could not believe how sneak attack powerful that movie was. I was like, oh my God, this is Field of Dreams.
It was so great.
This knocked the world. I mean, and you're not just going to magically write that. There's a process to it.
I'm a big fan of those filmmakers. They also did 21 Jump Street, which I loved. I
loved 21 Jump Street. That was another one. I thought it was going to be cool and cute, and it blew my mind.
Yeah, they're great. And so one of their main consultants is Lindsay Doran. I don't know if you got to see Lindsay. Her.
Yeah. Oh, okay, her. Yeah. Amazing. Perfect segue back to Austin. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So she'll be there again, I'm sure. She's there every year. And she's just a kind of master story consultant. Used to be a studio head. And she's just great at analyzing, you know, finding the heart in a story. So those filmmakers who made the Lego movie in 21 Jump Street always bring her in too to help, you know, bring up the heart and the emotion in their stories. And you can tell she does a good job.
Yeah, and the weird secret that she talks about, the talk is actually on YouTube. Maybe I'll put the link down below.
Sure.
She did a TED Talk, and she did it at Austin last year. And, I mean, it was almost like going to the opera to listen yes. to this talk. It was so incredibly just smart and cutting it down. And I remember the basic point of it is, and this is not doing it justice, but don't forget about the relationships. That yep. is what drives a movie home. And what's great about Lindsay Duran is, and if she ever hears this, I hope she doesn't take this the wrong way, like, you sometimes think of these studio heads as these big bad monsters who just right. care about money. What's the bottom line? What's the profit? We don't care about art. But Lindsay Duran looks like she should be running a bookstore on Martha's Vineyard. I mean, she's like this cute, biggest smile, glasses, you know, the long, yep. curly blonde hair, and just you would never think that this was a woman who could, a mastermind of,
yes.
master of the universe of Hollywood. It's
and
just
she
amazing.
Is, yeah.
yeah.
And so I had her one year, one of my scripts, Cardboard Castle, was a second rounder, mm-hmm. and I got selected for the, she does a first 10 pages challenge.
I was there last year for that. I didn't do it with my script. But that was brutal.
It is brutal. So out of the 10 scripts, only one, she only liked one of them enough to say, hey, I would read this past page 10. But that was like a huge, you know, of course, at first it's a huge ego blow of like, oh my gosh, she doesn't even want to read past page 10. But it really made me, you always hear like the first few pages are so important, but it really hammered it home. And that has been like the single biggest area of my focus, like the past couple of years, is those opening 10 pages. And even the opening page really yeah. is so critical because that's the first impression. And that's what I really see. And when I talked to Steve Skaya and got, you know, he's been mentoring me a bit and got his advice on one of my scripts, that was kind of the focus of it, was like, you got to nail those opening 10 pages. So.
I swear. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm done.
Okay. Well, that's it. That's the show. No, I'm just kidding. Megan and I have run into this a million times, Mike, and I think you'll agree with this statement. Like, there's one or two scripts I have not rewritten the last 10 pages.
The last 10 or the first 10?
Last 10. The last 10.
Oh, the last 10.
Because yeah. that's there. The ending is there.
Yeah.
But the first, and I mean like 10 to even 25 pages. Like, I think there was one script, I'm not even lying to you, I think I rewrote Act 1 every day that week.
Yeah.
I mean, just...
And that's great discipline that you can do that.
Yeah, it kind of has to be perfect in the sense of, like, perfection is a hard thing to describe. But people, I hear some writers sometimes complain about that and say, no, you got to keep reading, you got to keep reading, there's a payoff down the line. And they sometimes get mad at script readers.
Yeah.
Like Blacklist and script readers who say, or Lindsay Duran who will say, no, I'm not going to read past page 10. But think about this for a second. How many times have you sat down to watch a TV show? You watch the first act or two, you get to the first commercial break, and you're like, no, nah, I'm done.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, honestly, you can usually tell before that.
Yeah.
You watch a few minutes and you're like, eh.
Well, I'm not in your ruthless writers group. I'm nice.
But
that's the way the audience works. We have to think of them, too.
It's true. And on that point, you know, one great thing to help you be a better writer, I'm not talking about you specifically, Timmy D, you're a great writer.
Thank you.
Is work, read for a screenplay contest. So I did this a couple years ago. My friend Mike Kandarev asked me to read for the Chicago Screenplay Contest.
And I won that one this year. Thanks.
Yeah. Did you?
Yeah, I won the TV drama in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
So that's
awesome.
A big thumbs up on that contest.
That's
but no,
great.
I did not know you were a reader in that contest.
Not last year. Yeah.
Nobody in cahoots.
2 years ago. That's right. But what I found was, I think I had to read like 30 scripts. And I was shocked at how bad most of the scripts were.
Right.
So there are kind of a couple things to take away. One is that, you know, making the second round or something like that is a great accomplishment, because I feel like, especially people, like we hang out with a lot of, you know, pro writers or really good amateur writers, we get this kind of, you know, always comparing yourself to your peers, and you get a little discouraged, like, you know, everybody else is a really good writer, what about me? But we're comparing ourselves to kind of a very experienced group of people. When you go, you know, to these contests, you realize, wow, most people have a hard time stringing a few sentences together.
Yeah.
But going back to the first 10 pages thing, we had an option in the screenplay contest when we read, which was bail out at page 35. And that was if the script was so bad by page 35, you did not feel like reading further. Going into that, I thought, oh, well, of course I'm going to respect the writer and read every single script all the way through. And it was so painful. I bailed out at page 35 on like 90% of the scripts.
Wow.
Which I would not have expected going in. You know, that was a real surprise to me. And I realized, hey, if they can make you, you know, into it by page 35, it was basically the DNA is there in the first, you know, few pages. If they can hold your interest for a few pages, they can probably hold your interest for the whole script. If they can't hold it by page 35, there's no way it's going to get better. I did read a couple all the way through just to see if that was true, and it was true. It never gets better.
Yeah, it reminds of the notes we were talking about a few minutes ago. If you don't care on page 5, the payoff on page 20 ain't going to mean nothing.
Right, exactly.
You're going to yawn at the big twist.
Right, and you lose confidence in the writer, and you know when that ending comes, it's not going to be anything special, you know. And that was the case when I did read a couple of them all the way through. But then the ones that were great were really great, and there was a huge difference between these two. And so, you know, the ones I sent on, I really loved, and like there was just, I don't know, it was really obvious that there was a huge difference between these stories and these writers.
Do you find it's a good idea to be around, to have a circle? Like I want to almost talk about compiling a circle of trusted readers, which I think writer needs to have. And Austin is, again, a great place for that, to meet other writers, people who of the similar genres and interests, and maybe even some people of different genres and interests. I kind of like having a circle of people of varying skills.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like, I remember I was emailing with a writer the other day who is like on his sixth show. You know, he's a deep vet at this point. Sure. And then later on that day, I was emailing with a guy who's still working on his first script. And I was like, this is a good thing.
It is.
To see the two different perspectives.
Yeah, and so I totally do that, and I totally cultivate. I basically have, I forget what I call them, phases, or basically like rounds of readers that I go through, typically 3 to 4 rounds of different readers, of different skills, and kind of different focus. And I've gotten to know so many of them over the years that I, you know, it's like, I mean, it's more of a sports analogy, you know, who's a specialist in certain things. You're like, I really need a structure person on this round. Like, I know I'm missing this. So I'll go to, like, you know, one of my friends, Emily, who's a great structure person. She came out of development. She can just do the big picture stuff, you know. So that sort of thing, I'll go to her for that. Or I might go to, you know, by the later rounds, I'm going to somebody who's great at dialogue, or I'm going to, like, the really hardcore, like, pro writers who are gonna, like, give me the little nitpicky details that I wasn't ready to hear on draft 3, but on draft 8 I'm ready to hear them now. You know, I want to, like, polish it now.
Right.
So I tend to usually go for escalating. So first reader's my wife, just because I want somebody who doesn't know anything about screenwriting to read it and tell me, does it make any sense at all? You know, it's a very basic, like, are there 3 acts? Do they fit together? You know, what are the glaring holes that I missed because I'm in it and I can't see it? And then, you know, second round, I'll go with, you know, kind of peer writers, but maybe not as experienced as I am, just to get that outside perspective. Round 3, I'm starting to go to, like, those structure people where I know I got to blow some stuff up and reconfigure it. You know, these are when I want, like, the hard notes, that it takes me, you know, a couple months to, like, feel good about and figure out a way to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, by the end, it's, you know, the pros and people who are going to give me those kind of subtler skill tips, you know, the ones that they're not big glaring holes necessarily, but they're just a way to tweak something the right way.
I'm a friend of ours, I do his scripts and stuff, and a note I give that's along the lines of some of those is like, not like I'm the, I almost feel like I'm that last guy wringing the last bit out of the towel.
Yeah.
You know, like, totally. Hold on, there's another gag in that scene. No, 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 there's another scare. You can do one more scare before page 20, you know,
right,
that kind of thing.
Right, right. Yeah, and I feel that way when I get people ask me to read their scripts. I pretty much tell them, hey, I'm only going to be good to you on one draft of the script, so think carefully about which draft you want me to read.
Great, you know,
so
point.
If you give me, like, the rough first draft, I might not be the best reader for it because I can't give you all the notes I could because there are kind of too many notes, right?
Right.
So you want to go to somebody there who's like a peer, or not that I wouldn't be a peer, but like a fresh writer, or you know, somebody who can just tell you, hey, does this make any sense at all? It's when, you know, you've done a few drafts and you want, like, you want that, you know, blow it up a little bit, or you want those little subtle tweaks. That's when I feel I'm a more valuable reader to people. And, you know, it all depends on the skill of the writer as well. Like, if you're a brand new, fresh baby writer, yeah, don't hand it to an experienced reader till many drafts later. But if you're a very experienced writer, you know, of course, you know what you're doing, you know, by draft two or something, it's, you can hand it off.
That's such a phenomenal point, because I think that some people are so exhilarated by finishing the script. And I remember,
yeah.
I you know that feeling. Nowadays, it's a little bit less, but I remember the first two scripts I finished, and it was like, oh my God, you're just, it's so exhilarating. And you want to shout and scream to the world. But
yeah.
Knowing when to read it, knowing when to send it to a contest, knowing when to send it to the blacklist, because those people will kill you.
Oh, yes.
If you're not ready for the brutal honesty, that is a really big point. I think you also bring up a great point by having your wife read it, in the sense that, you know something, I think it's good to have non-writers in your circle. You
yes.
want to have audience members. Because remember, the movie is not going to be only for screenwriters. The movie is going
right.
to be for an audience. And I think that's a really phenomenal point, too.
Yeah, it's totally true.
But speaking of good news, like, your experiences in Austin and stuff like that, you've had a pretty nice break happen to you recently.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
I did. So a week ago, I optioned my finalist script from Austin.
Oh, congratulations.
So, thank you. It's called Santa Gate, and it's a family comedy about a 9-year-old kid reporter obsessed with the truth. His name's Bernie Snopes, and he tries to uncover the greatest grown-up conspiracy of all time, which is the secret of Santa.
Mm.
He's going to break it to all kids on national TV right before Christmas. So, and then it's kind of his struggle to determine, like, when is it the right thing to tell the truth, and when is it better to, preserve childhood. But that script is directly tied to Austin, and I'll just kind of go through the history of it,
because yeah,
I
please.
Feel it illuminates a lot of the different kind of support you get at Austin. So I started that script at the UCLA online professional program in screenwriting with one of my favorite screenwriting teachers, Tim Alba, and who will be there at Austin this year.
Awesome.
I'll have to introduce you to him. He's a great guy.
He's also named Tim, so he's got to be a great guy.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So it started there, and then I did a couple drafts and went to my very first Austin in 2010. And I was at the point where I thought the idea was good, but I wasn't sure how other people would respond to it. So I entered the pitch contest at Austin,
mm-hmm.
which is very nerve-wracking. And
yes.
I'm not a natural pitcher. I know some people are, but I got the pitch going. I got some help from some of the Pixar development folks, which was great. And I went and pitched, and I somehow ended up tied for third in the final.
Oh wow!
Thing,
congratulations.
Which was a great experience. Thanks. And it was really cool because it was a way of. You know, when you're writing, you don't get a chance to have people see your stuff that often. And so pitching it is kind of a way to get more people to hear the story. So it's kind of like a, almost like a stand-up comedy or something thing where you get immediate audience feedback on your story. And that was really satisfying. And it kind of sustained me for a while of, you know, people like this, they think it's funny. I'm going to keep muscling through the drafts, you know. And just the fact that I got third made me go, all right, I've got a good idea here. I got to see this thing all the way through, you know. So the other thing at Austin, the great thing is, yeah, you go to these second rounder happy hours, you just talk to other people in the bar, and you kind of make friends. And my advice is, you know, bring a ton of business cards, be friendly to everyone, and what you'll find is you'll make some friends, and they will become peer readers for you, which is great. So I'm pretty diligent about following up with people afterwards, you know, the people I really connect with. I'll send an email. We'll say, hey, let's exchange scripts.
Yeah.
You know, some people won't, or they say they will and they won't, but that's fine. You'll kind of like build your core group. So that happened. And I was able to get those, you know, build some readers for those earlier kind of drafts. And I used their notes, came back next year. I was still a second rounder. But that's when I did the thing I was talking about where I went and looked for the finalists and said, hey, what's the difference here? And Austin has this script room where you can go and read all the finalist scripts. So if you're, you know, if you're not going to meet somebody who will send you their finalist script, just go to that room and read a few scripts. And you'll kind of, the light bulb will go off. So I did that, got those notes and rewrote it. And sure enough, the next year I was a finalist, which was amazing. And, you know, that's the year I also met Stephen Simone, who helped me out on my journey. But I will say there was one really depressing thing about it, which was I was like, all right, I'm a finalist. I'm like top five script. Out of like, you know, I forget, 6,000 people or something enter this, right? I was like, all right, the managers and agents are going to be calling me. This will be great. I didn't get a single read request out of that. And I talked to a couple other finalists. One guy got one read request, but it was kind of, that was it. And I was like, this is just weird. Like, it's not like a normal job where you can, there are clear steps along the way, kind of, you know? So that kind of depressed me because I really expected, like, this is it. This is the start of my career. And that was in 2012, and it didn't happen right then. So
it happened right then, but...
Yeah, and then so the next year I came back, and I didn't have any scripts at all place. And I couldn't do my finalist script because once it hits semifinalist, you can't re-enter it,
right,
which is good. But anyway, I came back, but the nice thing is I had no agenda that year, and it was purely like, let me see my friends, I'm going to hang out, I'm not going to like get my heart set on like meeting a manager or agent.
It's totally what I'm doing this year, yeah.
And,
yeah,
and I love it. It was the most fun I had because I really had no agenda. You know, it's easier to talk to people that way too. You're not nervous of trying to like maybe ask for something, you know. It's just not a good way to go in. So I did that, and I ended up meeting like more pros than I ever met before, people who just gave me great advice. And one of my – so another great thing about the Austin Film Festival are these roundtables.
Mm.
And so I went to a roundtable, which is you sit at a table with, I don't know, six or seven other writers and then one pro. And some roundtables are geared towards agents and managers. Some are geared towards professional writers. And I sat down, and one of the guys, one of our pros was Edward Reichort, who wrote Now You See Me, which was a huge movie last year. And he's written a couple other things. And he was an Austin finalist a couple years before I was. And he told me, he gave amazing advice. But one of the key things was, yeah, nobody approached me after I was a finalist either. But he just decided to, you know, work it, and he just did a bunch of cold queries, basically.
Yeah.
And you know, this is where I made the mistake of, like, sitting back and being like, okay, I made finalists. That's it. This is the start, you know? And that's not true at all. He, you know, he grounded out, and what he ended up doing was making a $100,000 horror film off one of his scripts. Someone else directed it, but that kind of started his career. And then his next big spec sale was Now You See Me, which was a really big spec. So it was just kind of that, once again, that humility of, no, you're at the start of a very long journey. nobody knows who you are. Sure, you're a finalist, but you still got to go out there and talk to people and, you know, promote yourself and things like that. So,
I saw him at a Writers Guild event. I don't know him, but he's a wicked cool guy. And mm-hmm. he is also one of those guys. He made a point of saying, guys, I was in the audience too. It can happen. Don't give up. Keep fighting.
Exactly.
So yeah. Big thumbs up.
He was amazing. And then the other heartening thing was in that same roundtable, another pro I was at was Christopher Cantwell.
Yeah,
co-creator of Halt and Catch Fire, great show I love, and the werewolf one, which I can't remember the name of. But anyway, he was
Hemlock
also
Rope?
Yeah, Hemlock Grove, yeah. Exactly. He was also an Austin finalist, and I was like, oh man, look, these guys were finalists a couple of years ago, and now look where they are. So there is hope, you know.
Chris Cantwell was actually a trained clown. I spent some time. Oh,
that.
He's awesome. He's a super nice guy. I spent some time. I spent some time with him last year at Austin. That's the other thing too, is
there
accessibility.
Yeah.
And I'm talking like 10 minutes. We just, you know, walked out of a panel together. And he made sure everybody, because if you meet him, he's a very clean cut, button down shirt, professional looking guy. But he's like,
yes,
no, I went to clown college. I'm a proper. I'm like, what the fuck?
That is amazing.
I told him that I was a trained pro wrestling referee, and he says to me, everybody needs to know that.
Everybody. Seriously.
And he's right. And I've been telling
everybody
stick
out,
it's
right?
on my resume. And that's the thing. I took suplexes to get that job. So I should
there
break.
You go.
So, but
you
okay.
do.
But okay. Yeah. I do want to go back to networking for a second. But let's finish
sure.
up
yeah.
how you got, though, from
oh,
2012
to
now
yeah.
the option last week. Let's finish.
That's true. I got distracted there.
No.
So then I was a finalist. I realized, oh, it's not, you know, it doesn't just happen magically.
Right.
So I still but the good thing is I met Steve then, who gave me notes, especially on those opening 10 pages and ways to restructure it. So that was great talking to him. And that helped me kind of get to this polished draft. It was my 9th draft, basically. And that's the one I submitted to the blacklist online.
Mm.
And I think that's critical. You mentioned it kind of earlier, but you really want like your super polished kind of final, you know, in quotes, draft to go up there.
Yep.
Because they are going to be very brutal. but the good thing is it got good ratings. It got pretty good ratings, and I ended up paying for more ratings. So this is where I was able to, this is like a side note about strategy on the blacklist, but I don't know. One thing is I'm like a, you know, I'm a middle-aged guy now. So, one advantage I have over those 20-year-olds is I have a little bit more money than they do.
Yeah.
This sounds terrible, but you're looking for any advantage you can. So for that, I would buy more reviews. Cause I was like, I know the script is good. It placed, you know, it was a finalist. I know it's good. I'm not getting the reviews that I feel I should. And I knew from writing contests that a lot of it's the luck of the reader you draw. So I just, you know, I didn't buy a ton of reviews, but I bought, you know, probably twice or three times what people would normally buy. And sure enough, you know, some of my later reviews were higher and they bumped me up. So anyway, I was able to become the number one family. Actually, I was lucky enough to be the number one and number two family rated script on the blacklist
nice.
For a while.
Hells yeah.
Yeah. So that was great. And that's kind of what pushed the producers who optioned the script to really take notice of it. So they knew I was an Austin finalist. I was one of the guys. Stefan is a great writer in his own right, and he had been in my writing group for years. Then he left Pixar to run the writer's room at Telltale Games.
Wow.
So they did the Walking Dead game, which was great, and A Wolf Among Us. They're kind of like the new frontier of interactive storytelling. Anyway, he was there for a while, then he left to start his own production company. And so the blacklist thing plus Austin kind of made them go, all right, you know, this is a great script. It gives us confidence. We can, when we go to investors, say, hey, look, this script placed and all these things. So right now they're at the point where they're, you know, raising financing for their company, but they wanted to kind of build a a portfolio that they could go and say, hey, here are the movies we're going to try to make. So
exactly. That being an option writer is just awesome. That's the point. And I think you just nailed something so important. And this was something that they talked about in Austin a lot. I mean, like Chris Cantwell, Stephen Falk, Jenji Cohen, a lot of people talked about this in the sense of, it's not just about getting laurels so that you know you're a great writer. Look at it from the producer and agent and manager's point of view. These people don't have crystal balls. Yeah. They read 100 scripts a week or whatever it is. But when somebody like you comes along and says, hey, look, I got this, I got this, I got this. You are now credible. You now have an established track record behind your script so that they can turn around and say, hey, there's something to this. And that's kind of objective. That's how you bring the objectivity to something subjective. That's
true.
Fascinating.
And I feel our biggest problem as good writers is all the terrible writers out there who are also submitting their scripts and kind of, you know, you got to find a way to get out of that sea of kind of mediocre writers and show like, oh no, I'm better than this.
And I just love all the stuff you're talking about because it's not when you get bad notes, and it's not bad notes, but when you getting notes sucks. You know what I mean? Getting a five on the blacklist sucks.
Right.
There's no two ways about it. But don't stomp around and be like, the world's not ready for me, man. No, be objective and look at your stuff, and you may find, oh my God, that scene that I thought was perfect is all wrong, and you have to The other thing too is I told this. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I heard this great story about Robert A. Heinlein. As a novelist, another author visited him and saw this stack of books about China. And Robert A. Heinlein was like 65 years old or 70 years old. And he said, why do you have all those books on China? And he said, well, I'm writing a book about China and I need to learn about it. We never stop learning as writers. And it's like, this was a master science fiction, Hugo, Nebula, award-winning. And he's still saying, no, I'm still learning. So if Heinlein can still learn, so can we.
It's true. Yeah, I think that's one of the most fun things about writing for me is the research and delving into a topic.
Yeah,
I'm writing a short script right now, which I hope to direct at some point, but it's all set in the world of cults. So I've been reading all these crazy books about cults.
That's hot right now.
Yeah.
I want to read that. Put me in your circle.
Sure.
I want to talk, though, a little bit about some networking do's and don'ts, and I'm probably going to do a written blog about this, but Ed Solomon saved my – I was so nervous. Like, on the plane, I was like, oh, my God. But I met some wonderful producers of a great movie called Finding Neighbors on the plane. Like, so for me, and we started exchanging business cards between seats because we were just all talking about movies. It started there, and that put me kind of at ease of like, hey, just talk to people about their stuff. But Ed Solomon, who wrote Bill and Ted's the Bill and Ted Excellent Adventure, among numerous other things, great. I saw his opening panel the next day, and I was just so nervous about, like, am I going to say the wrong thing? Am I going to put foot in my mouth? Am I going to not meet the right person? Am I going to go to the wrong event? And he basically almost, like, it was almost telepathic. And he was like, don't think like that. Just meet people and just have fun and say hello. And everybody there is nervous. And it's really not. And he even brought up a great point, which you've brought up as well, which is there's the magic agent who is going to open all the doors for you. Yeah. They don't exist.
True.
It doesn't work like that. You talked about cold queries. When I won Chicago this year, I hear a lot of different things about query letters.
Sure.
Specifically, I hear don't do them. They don't work.
Right.
Well, in this day and age, it's free emails.
Right.
And my scripts now are at several managers because of Chicago and because of 2/8. Finnegan's got 2/8 on the blacklist.
That's awesome.
Which is also why you're glad the blacklist is brutal. So when you do get that 8, you're like, wow.
Right. They believe it.
Exactly. That 8 means something.
If I might talk about the networking a little bit. And Ed Solomon specifically is amazing. He's like a Yoda. Zen master, and I would highly recommend if you go into the Austin Film Festival, see Ed Solomon and see Shane Black, just because they're both experienced and they're able to talk more about the spiritual side of writing and how to sustain yourself and kind of the joy of the creative side of it. Because a lot of pros, I don't know if it's just a cultural thing of like they tend to be cynical in some ways. And talk about all the, you know, horrible studio notes and this thing and this difficult actor. And they don't talk as much about, like, the magic of it, which still is there. I think they just kind of take that as a given. But Ed and Shane will talk about the magic of it. So I know when I went to some of the panels, I would get a little bit down on all the business side of it, like how hard it was to get the attention of agents and things. But then I go to a panel by Ed or Shane, and I would come up feeling kind of rejuvenated, you know, and able to continue the journey.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, instead of, you know, and this is not like a note on you, but like for people who are finalists and are don't know what to do with it, you know, like, listen, I think us writers are very timid at times, and we get very self-conscious and nervous about, I don't want to bother you to read my script, or can you totally read my script? No, yes. You are now a finalist. You're a second rounder. If you have a seven on a blacklist, I think you are now authorized to go out. Because what you need to remember is, look, I have something to offer the world. Right. I am actually helping you by coming to you and saying, look, dude, or dudette, Mr. or Mrs. Agent, right. I am here, and you want this script. This script is going to be awesome. This show is going to be awesome, and I can prove it with some of these credentials.
Yeah, and it could change their lives too, you know? Yeah, and like when you're a reader, even just as a reader, I was so grateful for those great page-turning scripts that I read. It was like, this is electrifying. Yeah. I had a great experience, you know? So you want to give somebody that.
Oh, I love it. Dude, you're getting me psyched for the film. I want to go right now. We got to go to Gordo's.
We should. Hey, it's not too far away. But I did want to talk one more. I didn't get all the way to it, but talking about networking, one thing they really talk about at Austin is horizontal networking. And this was a big concept for me that I didn't really know before. Maybe this is a basic thing, but
you just read my mind. Go ahead.
All right, great. Because people usually think of networking as, go up and talk to that famous director or this big shot agent, try to get them to read your thing. And that doesn't really work out. The gap is too big there. Plus, you're not in a place where they can really help you, I feel, at that point. What you really want to do is network with your peers. So you go meet, you know, you go to the second rounder happy hour. You just go to a normal panel. I met a bunch of friends just after pitching because it's this shared kind of frightening experience.
Same here.
Afterwards, you go up to somebody and say, hey, I liked your pitch. I liked yours. You know, you meet a few friends that way. And you start to build those kind of like peers. So, you know, and just the proving this point is that the option that I got was from a guy in my writer's group who we exchanged scripts over years and got to know each other's writing and help each other get better. And, you know, eventually he was in a position where he could help out someone he knew. And, you know, he loved my script and knew it through that. So that's how that whole thing happened. Basically, the longer you're in the game and you're with friends with people in the industry, the more they're going to rise up the ranks and be able to help each other out. You know,
what you just said is such gold. That is so daggum true. That is almost the most important segment to listen to on the Austin Film Festival. And we had, unfortunately, a couple negative experiences last year. Like, I wore a suit to several of the things. Mm. And at one of the mixers, several writers walked up to me and were talking to me. And then when they realized I was a writer, a fellow writer, you saw their face fall because they thought I was an agent.
Yeah.
Because I'm walking around in this suit and everything.
That's so funny.
And it was really kind of disappointing. A few of them were like, oh. And you could just see they just got completely disinterested. So don't do that. And two, you know, Megan was with me last year. She was not in the festival. She was just coming with me to go to the festival. And we met a gentleman, and he walked with us to an event. And as soon as he realized I was a second rounder and Megan wasn't in the contest, Megan no longer existed.
Yeah.
And then we got to the event, and we met a finalist. And then me and Megan no longer existed. And it was all about, and it was like, and he was so blatant about it. I was like,
just sad.
Dude, like, you don't know. And like, I met some great people who straight up said, a really good friend of mine said to me, no, I didn't enter this year. My script is not ready. I'm here to get the education.
Great.
I'm like, exactly. Good for you. That's the right thing to do.
Yeah. And I honestly feel like, maybe I'm naive, but I feel like those people get weeded out who are just jumping from one, you know, level to another. I feel in the real world, people can see through that.
Yeah, I'm going to be hanging out with my friend Jim, who I met from the pitch contest. Exactly the scenario you said. We were both in the same pitch fest, and we both just chatted afterwards, and we exchanged scripts.
Yeah,
it's been a great experience.
That is great. And the other great thing is, so I, you know, I mostly started as a feature writer, and then I was interested in writing a couple TV specs, but I didn't know that world very much, and I needed readers who knew TV. So at the awards luncheon, which is also something I would highly recommend, it's a separate ticket. It's like 50 or 60 bucks, but totally worth it. Because you'll sit with other finalists, people up for winning, and you'll sit with a bunch of pros, because that's where they bring the keynote speakers, like the, you know, the awardees. So this year, like, you know, Matthew Weiner is going to be there. A couple other, Jim Sheridan, awesome writer, Irish writer. Some of those big folks are there. And so it brings a lot of pros there as well. So, yeah, quick segue on that. Last year, I sat next to Scott Neustadter, who co-wrote 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah, he's cool. I like him. He's a cool guy. But I went up to him and said, dude, that movie's not funny. Some of us live that. And he's like, me too. He's great.
Yeah, but the great thing about that is I got the postscript to 500 Days of Summer, which was he wrote this script to get over a girl, right? This heartbreaking script. He met with a bunch of managers and development folks, and he met with this one development lady who really loved the script, and they kind of hit it off. So they started going out, and now they are married and have a kid together.
Booyah. Love
so it was kind of out of this heartbreak came his, you know, marriage and fatherhood.
And exploring that heartbreak, the spirituality, writing stuff. One other thing I want to touch on is, and I heard, I believe it was, I might be saying the name wrong. Well, in fact, I'm not going to, oh, geez, I'm going to say it wrong. But so I'm not going to say the name, but a great phrase I heard from networking is be awesome and be gracious. And, you know, let's talk about the big shots for a second. When you get a chance to be with the big shots, other people want to talk to them too. Don't sit there and not let anybody else in. We had an experience with the wonderful, wonderful Vince Gilligan last year at the barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
And several folks somewhat, probably didn't mean to be, I'm trying to be nice here, were very much monopolizing a lot of his time. And Vince is a super nice guy, and he's talking to anybody and everybody. But I was able to slip in, and everyone's asking, Breaking Bad, Breaking Bad, Breaking Bad. And I said, Vince, I'm writing, long story short, I'm writing a pilot about a Western. I know you're a Western fan. What Westerns do I need to watch?
Oh, great.
And he gives me a list of Westerns, some of which were, he's like, no, you probably haven't heard of these. Check these out. I said, that's thanks very great. Much, Vince Gilligan, and I walked away. And awesome. I was then able to sneak in other friends who were waiting and getting really annoyed. Like, why can't we get in? Everybody's chewing. Like, these. And I was able to slip them right in.
Nice.
You know, be perfect. Awesome. Be gracious. Everybody's, you know, it's.
Find out their interests. Like, you knew he was into Westerns.
Yeah. And
probably sick of Breaking Bad questions.
May have been. I don't know. He certainly didn't show it. He was happy to talk to everybody. But there's a misconception that Hollywood is this cutthroat shark tank. And, okay, it is. But we also are kind of all in it together. Like, you're a competitor to a degree because you're another writer.
Sure,
but, Mike, I'm never going to write a movie like Santa Gate. I will never in a million years write that movie. And so why wouldn't I want to see it and help you out and be happy for your success? Right. And I think that speaks to your point about the horizontal networking. We're all in it together. We all help each other. And you never know that guy you're sitting next to who hasn't even finished his first script in 3 years, maybe the producer whose options your script, like your story.
And honestly, I would say even if we were direct competitors, we can still be colleagues and help each other out.
Absolutely.
And maybe, you know, someday you're getting these family comedy jobs and you're too busy to write the next script. So you go, hey, check out my friend Mike. You know what I mean?
I have passed along several scripts to producers from stuff that is like, no, I wouldn't write that, but my friend so-and-so did. Here, check out his work. Yeah. And you know what that does? That means when you do that, at the risk of sounding kind of weird about it, everybody likes you.
Yeah.
You are then a friend. You are then a pal. You are then a professional. Everybody will like you.
Yeah, it's totally true. But speaking about monopolizing time, the other etiquette thing there I think is really critical, you're talking about Vince Gilligan, is at the round tables.
Yes. Will happen. Oh, my God, yes.
Right? So you always get one person at the round table who's just trying to monopolize, and that's just not good for anybody at the table, right? You want to give everyone a chance to ask questions.
I blocked a guy last year. He literally asked like 6-7 questions, and I saw this other guy like kept trying to ask a question. I cut that first dude off. I did, Mike. I stepped in.
Great.
But
I think that's good.
Yeah.
Help out. Yeah, you were reading the table and saying, hey, this guy's monopolizing time. Everybody needs a voice here.
Yeah, and everybody should deserve to have a great experience. And the festival is so friggin' big.
Yeah.
You're gonna miss stuff. Just you're not gonna see everything. Pick and choose your battles, and you'll have a much better time.
Yeah. I feel like, just talking about that, the first couple of years I purely went for those, you know, informational panels, like, how do I structure my script, blah, blah, blah. But there's such a variety of topics, even to the point of, you know, indie filmmaking, getting your own thing made, that you can really just choose your own track, you know, pick and choose what you want to go to. And, 1 year I went to all agent and manager panels, and those were a little disheartening, but I still learned some stuff. Now I try to kind of get a mix, and lately I've mostly been going to stuff that's like talking to, you know, these great writers or showrunners, getting their experiences, and you just kind of soak in some of their professionalism and their anecdotes about the business.
And hey, you just talked about directing a short. Maybe you'll go to a budget panel.
This year I'll probably do a little bit of the indie filmmaking. If I could talk about that just a little bit,
please.
I feel so lately I've also been of the opinion that it's better to get them to come to you than you to go to them and say, hey, will you please read my script, right? And most people don't like to read. So even people in the business don't necessarily like to read. So, you know, the odds of you getting your script read aren't super high. But if you can make a short that goes viral, and I have a buddy who did this, and it kind of kickstarted a lot of stuff for him. My buddy Jason Headley, who I met at Austin a few years ago and is now one of my good friends, he did this nail in the head short that got like 10 million views. And it got him an agent. It got him a lawyer.
Wow.
Now he's got some interstitial Heineken shorts on the Sundance channel. And, you know, it was because he was able to create his own thing and do it himself and get them to come to him, you know? It was somebody, all these people contacted him off the short, like, hey, man, I love this short. You know, I want to help you out any way I can. I want to represent you, you know, things like that. Whereas before, he was trying to get a script read and nobody would read it, you know? So
Great point. That's a great story.
And I feel, okay, he got, you know, 10 million views off this short. There's no way ever that 10 million people are going to read your script. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You're just not going to get that same level of exposure. So the more you can kind of control your own destiny and get your writing out there, you know, the better.
You literally nailed my own personal philosophy. A lot of people don't understand. It took me a long time to learn this, too. I'm not saying this in a snobby way.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to learn that you are the master of your own destiny in the entertainment business. You really are. You are truly in the driver's seat. And by the way, like, as writers, this is the only time you're in the driver's seat, because once you sell to a studio, that, thanks for the script, pal.
Right.
I hope you like the movie.
It's funny you talk about that, because that's part of my impulse to try directing, is because I want to have more involvement in the final product, right? So I don't necessarily, it's kind of in a transitional stage right now, but I don't want to necessarily just hand it over and have it get changed and rewritten by 12 writers and my name taken off, you know? So I'm like, if I can do it myself, I have more control over it. You get more visibility, you get a little more say in things, you know? So seems like a good way to go.
I love it. Speaking of, we're coming up on time, but before I let you go, I want to talk about one project you've had a lot of control over, which is, you're not just a screenwriter, you're also a proper author.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us all about that?
Sure. So I also do children's book writing, and I've been doing that for about 5 years through this wonderful teacher we've had at Pixar, Lissa Rovetch, who's an author, and she writes for Highlights. I don't know if you remember that magazine.
Oh, God,
when you were a kid.
Oh, the dentist's office, absolutely.
Yeah. She's got a column in there. And she's just an amazing teacher and great at getting you going creatively. Anyway, through her, the first year I met this other just wonderful person, Sungyun Jo, who is she's a Korean lighting artist at Pixar, but also just a wonderful artist in her own right, drawing and painting, and she does shadow puppets as well, all kinds of creative things.
Mm-hmm.
But and so what I liked about children's book writing as compared to screenwriting is that it's a lot shorter, so you can rewrite it in like 20 minutes instead of, you know, a month.
Right.
And it's a little bit more like poetry. Like, it's this very short kind of emotional thing, and there can be some really beautiful children's books.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so that part of it I really loved. And so I started doing that, and I eventually got a couple editors interested in some things, and I'm still talking to some of them. But I realized, oh, even if you get an editor interested, it's probably 2 to 3 years from the time you get them interested
right.
to the time it actually comes out on the shelves. And I work in technology for my day job, where it's all digital, everything, right? Software. Some guy in Vietnam can write an app by himself, you know, Flappy Bird, and make $50,000 a day selling it on the iTunes store. So I was like, all right, you know, I'm a child of the digital era. How can we do this in a more digital way? And that's ebooks. So I decided, all right, I'm going to, you know, there's nothing stopping me. Like you said, taking charge of your own destiny. So I just talked to my friend Sung Yeon, and I said, hey, let's do an ebook together. We can basically do it for free. The only cost is our time, because Apple has this great iTunes creator,
mm-hmm.
iBooks creator app where you can lay out the book. And my friend had we basically did the entire book on the iPad directly.
Wow.
Which was a pretty amazing process, because we'd have our biweekly meetings, just bring the iPad, I could give her notes on the story, and she would just draw right on top of the images, like notes for herself, like, you know, change this pose, or like, you know, sketch right on top of it, which just totally shortened the cycle, you know, to get something out. So we basically met biweekly for most of the summer. So I would say it took about 6 months total, but 6 months compared to 3 years, right?
Yeah,
so,
sure.
And the great thing is we had complete creative control. So it was a dialogue between me and her on what would look best, what fit the emotion of the story best. And we ended up with something we were both really proud of. And we could completely control, including the distribution and everything. So once we finished it, it was as simple as uploading it through iTunes Producer, submit it to the iBook store, and within 24 hours, it's in 48 countries around the world.
Wow.
Which is amazing to me. And then people could start downloading it and reading it. So the other great thing about that is that, you know, relatives of mine who always hear, you know, they hear, oh, you're a writer, you know, I'd love to read something of yours. You're not going to necessarily give them a script, because they might not know how to read a script or something like that. But this was like a finished product they could consume and see, like, oh, yeah, you actually do know how to write. I've heard about this for years, but hey, here's the proof. And just getting, you know, feedback from people instead of, you know, you write scripts, you kind of throw them out there, you don't get feedback sometimes, or you don't get people reading it, and just this experience of like people saying, oh, I love this, this was really touching, all that has just been amazing. And you can directly watch like how many copies were downloaded today, you know, things like that, which is really empowering to know you can do the whole thing yourself.
So that
has been an awesome experience.
Yeah, I gotta imagine, like, sometimes with the like audience comments as opposed to, you know, sometimes you get those reader comments.
Yeah.
The inciting incident didn't bring forth the compliment,
right.
as opposed to the audience who just will surprise you with, like, oh my God, I love that one scene.
Right.
That really
I
spoke
this.
To me. It reminded me of my childhood
right.
or something
exactly.
that you didn't really even know.
Totally. This brought
yeah.
me to tears. You know, a reader's not usually going to say that.
No. Or for the wrong reasons you brought the reader to
right.
tears.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's been, and honestly, that experience of doing the ebook is also what prompted me to think about directing, is because I was kind of directing Sung Yeon on the artwork and the feel of the entire thing, and, you know, able to change my words. And then I thought, oh, no, you know what? We can tell this better with her picture.
Yeah.
I can cut some of this stuff out. But it kind of made me, you know, feel responsible for the whole process. And I was very comfortable. What I found is, before that, I had been very scared of directing. Like, well, yeah, I have my opinions, but I'm not really necessarily good at managing people, things like that. You know, I'd rather sit in my room alone and type. But right. What I found is if I have the creative vision, then I'm very confident and secure in giving, you know, direction to other people on, no, you know, it should be like this, not like this, or, oh, yeah, that's a great idea, let's go that direction. And so it kind of gave me more confidence in that whole process.
It's when I interviewed Mike Dotto almost 10 episodes ago, he talked a lot about that and having vision, but also certainty, but also flexibility of being able to roll with changes. But you have to have that confident vision. You can't just be like, I don't know what.
Right. What and I feel like as writers, we have that. That's natural and that's built into us. We have the creative vision or else the script wouldn't exist.
Absolutely right. So, well, okay, we ran a little. Well, you know, some of the show's been running a bit over, but I've gotten zero complaints. So there you have it. Mike, this has been awesome. I am psyched. I can't wait to. We're going to go to Gordo's, which is a. Oh, my God.
The most amazing donut shop ever.
It's insane. Just look. I mean, it's not. It's a 4-pound donut with bacon on top,
or fried chicken and honey.
Oh, God!
Can't wait.
Yeah, I'm like.
And the one other thing we got to mention before we go is the Driscoll.
Absolutely.
Right, which is that's where the real conference at Austin happens. That's the main bar in the hotel, the Driscoll. And that's where you'll meet the most people. That's where a lot of the pros hang out. So, you know, make friends with somebody, buy them a drink, you know, ask them about what they do.
Yeah, that's where you'll meet us. If anybody's listening, go in Austin.
Yeah.
Come on up, find Handsome Timmy D. I'll be the guy handing out pens. Every writer needs a pen. And you'll find out why when you're there.
Yes.
It's going to be a great time. We can't wait. I'm wicked psyched. So, God,
me too.
Mike, thanks so much for taking the time and telling us all about this. And that's some really, really great just screenwriting advice overall.
Oh, thanks, Timmy. Yeah, it's been great to be on here.
Oh, terrific.
So keep up the good work on the podcast. It's really fascinating.
Oh, I'm trying, man. It's been one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life, I'll tell you. I don't mind saying that live.
Yeah.
It's been so, so fun. Anyway, hope everybody enjoyed listening. Next week, got some really wicked exciting stuff coming up. In fact, I think Sky is going to be on.
Hopefully,
in the next couple of weeks. We've been talking about it because he's got some great stuff to plug and unleash upon the world.
Awesome.
So that should be great. Sky is great. You guys are going to love him. So anyway, links are below to Mike's book, to the Austin Film Festival, and a bunch of fun stuff. Thanks very much for reading and listening and retweeting and downloading. And we will see you next week on the Handsome Timmy D Express.